Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Now, today I would like to talk about Zach Polanski. And for any American viewers, Zach Polanski is a member of the London Assembly and is the leader of the Green Party, a party that has recently unexpectedly won a by-election in Manchester and is looking like it's going to really blow up. It's going to become really significant in British politics, partly because of the way in which it manages to take, bizarrely, considering the nature of its coalition between sort of leftist hippies and so on, the Muslim vote. But Zach Polanski, what is the psychology of this Zach Polanski guy? I would argue his psychology is so obvious, it's screaming at us, and yet people don't want to see it. Before that, could you do me a favour? Could you please subscribe? Could you subscribe on YouTube? Could you leave a like, hit the bell button, leave a comment, spread the video far and wide? Or subscribe to my Substack, that's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most based research I can put on YouTube, in-person interviews, vlogs, blogs. I mean, if you like what I do, films I make, you can support what I do for the cost of a pint of beer a month. Okay, back to the video. So Zach Polanski. There's a lot of research that finds that charismatic politicians are, and he is charismatic. I've watched a speech by him earlier that we are going to tax the rich, and there's a wild applause. He is charismatic. Charismatic politicians are of a certain kind. Charismatic politicians, to a certain extent, are able to lead us astray, are able to make a cold world feel warm again. But it isn't really warm again. It only feels warm because of the power of their charisma, the power of their confidence, the aura that they project. And for his audience, that's what, for the Green supporters, a lot of left-wing young people, that's what Zach Polanski is like. He is able to project this aura. Probably he's taken on a kind of false narcissistic self where he sees himself as perfect and sees himself as wonderful and sees himself as morally superior. And so he feels that he's great. He feels that he's amazing. And this is able to inspire other people, to make them feel that everything is going to be okay, even if it's not, even if what he's promising would lead to economic chaos and collapse and ruin and hell. It draws in those people that feel bitter and resentful and angry and hard done by. In general, studies have shown that people that are left-wing are higher in neuroticism, in mental instability, than are people that are right-wing, and they are higher in narcissism, and they are higher in Machiavellianism. And this all makes sense, because if you are mentally unstable, then you see the world as a kind of frightening, unpleasant place, and you want power over the world because it's frightening and so forth, so you want to control it. But because you are mentally unstable and frightened, you don't go for a fair fight. And so you play for power covertly. How do you play for power covertly? You virtue signal. You go on about the importance of equality and the importance of harm avoidance, and you indicate that you're not really interested in power. Of course not. You're just interested in the poor people. You're just interested in the hard done by. And that is the way that you get power. And that is what he has done. And what you also do is you identify with the out-group, in this case, Muslims, because you say, I'm so kind, I'm so lovely, identify with the out-group. Whereas in reality, it's a way of creating a coalition that you can, where you can have power over your own in-group. And that is his system. It is a coalition of white, left-wing, middle-class people and Muslims with whom he identifies. But he is screaming at us, this mental instability. He is screaming at us in a way that no other politician that I've seen in recent years is screaming it at us. So what do we know about him? Well, first of all, he was born David Paulden. His name was David Paulden. He then decided when he was 18 years old that he would change his name to Zach Polanski. His parents moved to England during, or sorry, his grandparents, his ancestors moved to England during the war, and their original name was Polanski. And they changed it to Paulden because they thought that there would be less problems with anti-Semitism and anti-foreigner prejudice and so on if his name was Paulden. And his name was David. However, his stepfather's name was David Barry. And apparently, to distinguish himself from David Barry, he decided to drop the name David in favour of the name Zach. Now, what does this reflect? Well, it reflects identity disturbance, that he has a problem with who he is, that he's not sure who he is, that his identity is unstable, that he's left wondering who and what he is. And so he has to deal with that by, in a sense, creating a new self, creating a new person with a new name. And that person is a completely new name. And that person is Zach Polanski. Now, of course, you get actors and people like this, although they're often very high in narcissism, who will take on stage names, or writers that will take on nom de plumes, though this is often as a publicity thing, or it's because they don't want people to know who they are, or maybe it is because of a kind of separation of self, where they want to separate their ordinary everyday self from the famous writer or the famous actor. Who knows? But what you seem to have here is particularly because it occurred at the age of 18, it occurred when he was very young, is an indication of a kind of crisis where neuroticism will make you doubt everything. It will make you unsure of everything. It will make you anxious about everything, including who you are, including your very self. And you will wonder who this self is. How do you deal with it? You assert a strong sense of self. You assert a strong sense of identity. This is why people that express, that exude a very strong sense of identity are often a way of papering over the cracks of mental instability. So what he decided that he would do is say, I am Jewish. I am Jewish. That's who I am. That solves the problem. That papers over the cracks. And therefore, he adopted his family's original Jewish surname, despite the fact that they had originally rejected it in order to integrate into the country. There's probably a degree to which, of course, it makes him stand out as well. A narcissistic desire to stand out, to be different, to be above the crowd, to be a little bit different, and therefore to have the original Jewish surname. So it reflects mental instability. Now, that would have been more than enough if he was just known as David Polanski. But even that isn't good enough. Even that isn't good enough. His excuse was he wanted to distinguish himself from his stepfather, who was called David Barry. I don't know why he would have such a need to do that. Why he could, it's a complete coincidence that his stepfather happens to be called David. I don't know why he would need to do that. I suppose it's deeper than that. Once you're rejecting both your names, and legally changing them as well, which I don't think Tommy Robinson has done, which is why they always say Tommy Robinson, real name Stephen Yaxley Lem. That's just his nom de guerre. He's completely content with his original name. It's nom de guerre is Tommy Robinson. No, this is him changing his name as though he wasn't happy with his original self. He wasn't happy with who he was when he was 18. And so he decided to deal with all these feelings of insecurity and feelings that he didn't matter and whatever by adopting a completely new name, an unusual surname, Polanski, and a very unusual Christian name, Zach. And this allows him to stand out. This allows him to be different. This allows him to feel unique. This allows him to assert a strong sense of identity. This is a way, this is a method by which you deal with very pronounced mental instability. And his background, remember that the hereditary nature of these traits is very high. The heritability of narcissism is about 50%. The heritability of neuroticism in general is about 50%. These are strongly genetic traits, according to twin studies. And moreover, people tend to sexually select for genetic similarity. They select for people that have traits like they have, which elevates the degree. So neurotic people will tend to marry on average, though there are, of course, exceptions, other neurotic people and produce neurotic children. Now, one of the predictors of divorce is neuroticism. Divorce is a correlate of being high in neuroticism. If you're a neurotic, you feel negative feelings strongly, you get angry, you get jealous, you get anxious, whatever. It elevates the likelihood of divorce. Divorce is also predicted by low agreeableness, i.e. low empathy, low altruism, and low conscientiousness, i.e. low rule following and low impulse control, because there's arguments and fights and all that sort of thing. And so divorce in general is associated with, you know, with mental instability and antisocial personality. And indeed, on average, people that are left wing are higher in those antisocial personality traits than people that are right wing, for reasons that we've kind of alluded to. Now, what do you find in his parents' background? Bearing in mind the heritability of this, you should probably be aware of it if you are dealing with a person whose parents are divorced. That is likely to say something about them and their psychology. On average, of course, there are exceptions. On average, what do we find? Who is his mother? His mother is a woman called Ava Mardo, who in 1973 marries Sidney Jacob, I assume fellow Jew. They are divorced by 1981, when she marries his father, Philip Paulden. And then when he is still quite young, from what I can work out, he's an only child, is Zach. And then when he is still quite young, his mother divorces his father, divorces again, and then remarries in 1993 to David Barry. So that's two failed marriages. Now, I don't know who she is. I don't know anything about her. But on average, this is telling you something about the psychology of these couples. And this is likely to be passed on genetically and due to the nature of the environment that is created to the son. So that only further demonstrates the point that Zach Polanski provides, whatever the reality is, indications of pronounced mental instability. And this is most obvious in his identity struggle, in his identity disturbance. And so that's the kind of thing that you should think about if you're thinking of voting for him. If you're thinking of voting for him and his people, that this is a man who has severe identity disturbance, which is associated with mental instability, which is not necessarily associated with the most brilliant of outcomes if you put such a person in charge of a country. So that, ladies and gentlemen, is who Zach Polanski is. And I think it is amazing that this fact has not been commented on. It has not been commented on that he has identity disturbance, because having identity disturbance says a great deal about a person's psychology. Zach Polanski is this person that he has adopted in order to paper over the cracks in his identity and to paper over his various psychological difficulties. He is David Paulden, and he cannot accept that fact. I hope this is a bit of interest, and tally-ho, and goodbye.
Are you ready for the future of the West?